the two faculty senate meeting to order. Move to item two, verification of quorum. The Illinois Open Meeting Act provisions, as a public body, faculty senate must have a quorum of a simple majority for a meeting to convene. But do we have a quorum to proceed?
We do have a quorum, and I'll just take a moment to remind everyone who's joined us today to please complete that attendance sheet that's at the table or on the chair, and just leave it on your seat and we'll, or at your place, we'll pick it up after the meeting. Also, our meeting today is being recorded, and even though you might have a really loud voice and we might be able to hear you just fine in this room, we ask you to please go to one of the microphones if you want to make a comment or ask a question, so that even those who are listening on the live stream can hear, and so that we also have it on the recording. Also, it really helps us if you tell us your name and your constituency that you're representing when you make a comment or ask a question. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you, Pat, for this logistical information. So this brings us to item three, adoption of the agenda for today's September 28, 2022 Faculty Senate meeting. May I have a motion and a second to adopt today's agenda? Okay, we have. Okay, and good. All in favor signify by saying aye. Any opposed? Abstentions? Thank you. So the approval of the agenda for today's meeting has passed, and we shall now move to agenda item four, to approve minutes of the August 31st, 2022 meeting. Everyone should have the minute in the agenda packet that Pat has sent out. The minutes are on page 3 through page 5 in the packet. We'll allow about a minute for folks who would like to refresh their mind or look it over. May I have a motion and a second to approve the minute? Eat. All in favor signify by saying aye. Any opposed? Abstentions? Any discussions, additions, deletion to the agenda? Okay, seeing no discussions. Minute for the August 31st, 2022 meeting passes. Thank you, everyone. Agenda item five is public comment. Pat, do we have any timely request for public comment?
No request for public comment today.
Okay, so this brings us to agenda item six, Faculty Senate President announcement. So for this agenda item, I want to use the opportunity to remind faculty about the applications for the faculty personnel advisor position that was brought to this body attention during the last faculty senate session. The deadline to receive application from interested candidates in this position is October 7th, 2022. Information on this position can be found in the August 31st meeting minute. It is also posted online in the NIU official announcement for the week of September 26th. I also want to take a moment to acknowledge our special guests who are joining us today in relation to two items, presentation and a campus safety issue listed under items for faculty senate consideration. First off, I'm excited to welcome to Faculty Senate Joy Mitchell, Director of the Office of Student Conduct. As a background, the Office of Student Conduct within the Division of Student Affairs is charged with administering an educational developmental student process rooted upon the mission, values, goals of the university. As of August 2022, the office has adopted a new code of student conduct. Joy Mitchell is here with us today to introduce the changes to the student code of conduct. Second, I want to welcome our special guest seated to my right, City of DeKalb Manager, City Manager of the City of DeKalb, who is not strange to NIU, Bill Nicholas, City of Police, City of DeKalb, Officer David Bird, and two of our own from NIU, NIU Chief of Staff from the Office of the President, Matt Streb, and NIU Chief of Police, Officer Darren Mitchell. And lastly, as this body recalls, during the last Faculty Senate session on September 28, the second reading of the proposed amendment to student evaluation of instruction policy was passed unanimously. The policy is now making its way up to the university policy library. And because of its vital importance to the academic curriculum and faculty personnel process, I would like to urge all faculty senators to communicate the passing of this policy to your home department. And with that, we will move to agenda item 7. Which is Provost announcement, and I had conferred with Provost who does not have any announcement, but nevertheless, the benefits for having the Provost announcement on the agenda is that, you know, we have her amongst us, so if there is question, I'm happy to defer just a minute or so. If anyone has question that you need to direct to the Provost is with us, and maybe she can address that quickly. Before we move on. Is there any question anyone would like to? Okay, seeing none, we will move on to agenda item 8, items for Faculty Senate consideration. For this, we have two items. Agenda item 8A, is a presentation on new student code of conduct by Joy Mitchell, Director of the Office of Student Conduct, who, as I stated in my welcome remarks, is here to introduce changes to this new to the student conduct to faculty, and to hopefully engage our thoughts, questions, and collaborations to help foster student success that her office is charged with. So Joy Mitchell, welcome to Faculty Senate, and the floor is all yours. Thank you, stand on.
Testing, can you all hear me? Hello, everyone. My name is Joy Mitchell. I am the Director of Student Conduct here at NIU. I do like to start with introducing myself because some of your faces I have never seen before, and I'm sure it's the same for mine. So just a little bit about me in the short time that I'll be before you. As also being the Director of Student Conduct, I'm also a person outside of my work, as you all are. I also do photography. I'm a mom and wife of three. A mom of three and a wife. Not a wife of three. Sorry about that. I'm also an NIU grad from undergrad as well as grad school. So I've been at NIU for a very long time in different capacities. And also, I also have a connection with NIU police. At the time when I was an officer long, long ago, when I was younger, 20s, 22, 23, Chief Mitchell was one of the lieutenants at the time. So yes, it's a full circle moment for me. So again, thank you for welcoming me into your meeting. I won't be before you long. So I just want to talk a little bit about what is student conduct. I think oftentimes student conduct gets the narrative that we are the principal's office or, you know, the big bad wolf on campus. And so it's important to me to change that narrative, especially as we are going, as we're in this new year. So just some pieces that I put here for you, for your consideration. Student conduct is an educational process to promote responsible behavior. But in that, we want to make sure that it's educational and we're intentional and also restorative in this process. I'm missing a point. Yes. And so some pieces that we are adding this year is restorative conferencing. And so what that means is the parties involved, those who were harmed and those who caused harm, can come together to come up with a solution for whatever that was that happened. So whatever the incident was. Of course, this is a process that is voluntary. Outside of the traditional conduct process. One of the incentives with that is it doesn't become a student conduct record, but it is a way to help students to deal with conflict and also learning how to converse and deal with uncomfortable situations. So that is something that we have added, as well as other educational programming. We are coordinating with different campus partners to coordinate for healing circles, things of that nature with ADI, and utilizing those as well as options for our students outside, again, of the traditional conduct process. And then there's also conflict mediation. There are cases that we get where it may not necessarily need to go through the traditional conduct process, or the hope is that we can use alternatives. And so conflict mediation, again, is another thing that students can utilize, where they can talk through their issues and also gain some education on how to deal with uncomfortable situations. My goal for this department, for this particular office, is not to ding our students, to create a conduct history. If there are other options, I want to make sure we can utilize that and also educate them in the process. I like pictures, so that's why you'll see a lot of different things. So as being the new Director of Student Conduct, for me, it's important that I express my vision and expectations for student conduct today. And so I'll talk a little bit about that before you. So I kind of focused on it a little bit, but as far as my vision and expectations for student conduct, this is definitely a space where I want there to be more options. I think historically we've utilized the conduct process with students where, you know, you get in trouble, you're coming to see someone in student conduct, there may or may not be sanctioning. I think it's important that we utilize other ways when it comes to educating our students, where it's not viewed as a punitive process, but something that is educational, where they actually can take something from it and learn and grow and take those skills and actually put them into practice. So that's something that's really, really important for this department for me. And so again, creating those options in those spaces. One of the pieces that I didn't put on the previous slide, I apologize, was conflict coaching. Sometimes students, you know, I would say a lot of our students oftentimes will stress their concerns and frustrations on social media. That's a big thing, whether it be about a student or a staff member or what have you. And so we've created a space for students to come and discuss in confidence, maybe an issue that they're dealing with within reason, and maybe discussing some ways to approach it. So again, they could take those tools and utilize them outside when they're in, you know, having conflict with others or dealing with an uncomfortable situation. Also for our department, it's definitely important for me to be collaborative and partnering in the student conduct process. And so, for example, in situations where students are, maybe there's a disruptive behavior report, we've really been working more on working with departments, with the students, with that professor or instructor to figure out a plan of action for that student, whether it be a behavioral expectation plan, things of that nature, to hopefully, again, add that extra layer of accountability for the student. And so hopefully that will help versus, you know, a student, you know, going through the traditional conduct process, which in some cases is necessary. But we want to provide those options and also having more developmental conversations with our students, understanding that the process for students is different. They're at different levels developmentally. And so it's important that we're having those discussions as well. And so those are some of the pieces for my vision and expectations. Okay, moving on to the code. So out with the old and in with the new code of conduct. We have been working on the code all last year, and it was official on August 2nd. It's a bit shorter, and one of the things was we wanted to make sure that it was easier to read and understand. I also have some copies if you would like. It's also located on our website, which is what that link is. I wanted to pull out some of the main things that are probably most relevant for this group. Disruptive behavior. So there's definitely been some changes to the definition for disruptive behavior. It is more comprehensive. I would say last year was probably pretty short and a bit vague. And so we went about creating, again, making it more comprehensive, especially when it comes to issues in the classroom or in the residence halls where we are speaking to those issues to also support our faculty and staff. As far as academic misconduct, I would say that for the majority, that pretty much is consistent and has stayed the same. When it comes to cases for student conduct, the process typically with the first time with students, it would be, we are asking that you document it and also let our office know. We notify the student. And again, this is for a first time. Typically, if it's a second time, they will be called into our office and go through the traditional conduct process. Ultimately, if a student disagrees with a decision, they would go to a academic board hearing, which would include two faculty members, one of which will be a professor and a student representative. Okay. We also ask that the professor be present if they're able. Any questions? I think I pressed the button wrong, but but I don't want to take up too much time. Those were the main things.
Okay.
Yep. I did want to ask, did anyone have any questions about submitting incident reports? Okay. There are two specific spaces to submit reports on our website. You would typically, as faculty, use the academic misconduct report form. In situations where you're concerned about a student, we also have the student of concern report form. That's where you will report anything that you find suspicious or odd and you would like us to respond. There is a space for that as well. So I just wanted to make sure you all are aware of that. Outside of that, I am done. Any questions? Yes. So as far as student of concern, I would say, for example, the difference would be maybe you have a student in your class who has expressed feelings of depression. Maybe they're a student who was showing up for class, turning in assignments, and you see a shift in that. And maybe they stop coming, or maybe you see them come into class disheveled, or things that are odd that you might have not seen before. And you might be concerned about that student. And outside of having a conversation, you can send in that report. It's not really an alleged conduct violation versus a concern, a genuine concern that you have for that student. And then it would allow our committee to respond and to provide any interventions that the student might need. Question? Anything else? Thank you for your time.
Okay, thank you very, very much. Please join me in thanking. Thank you. So our next agenda item is item 8B, campus safety issue. Many of us in this auditorium today have probably experienced firsthand or may have read or seen lately in the news that the CALP over the last couple of weeks have witnessed an uptick in gun violence, gunshot, and a series of petty and other forms of crimes. Many of these incidents, according to the latest report, are concentrated in the Arnigliden North near the NIU campus, with the 800 block Ridge Drive within that vicinity, reputed to be in a source of concern to campus safety and security. Faculty who raise concerns have asked what the university and the city of DeKalb officials are doing to curb the occurrence of these violence that could creep at any time into campus. I want again thank all our guests for making time to come to Faculty Senate to address these concerns over campus safety and to speak on what the university and the city of DeKalb are doing to contain the source or the spread of this violence. The format of this discussion is going to be conversational style with Matt Streb and Bill Nicholas starting the conversation, and Chief Bird and Chief Mitchell following up to report on specific actions or strategies their individual department are taking or doing to address this issue. So after we hear from our guests, we will take questions from the floor and we will take the conversation from there. This agenda item today is probably going to be, we're going to be spending the bulk of our time on this agenda item. So when it comes to questions and comment session, we will be intentionally mindful of time. So without further ado, I want to thank again our guests and turn the floor to Matt and Bill Nicholas to start the conversation.
Thanks, Ismail. Good afternoon, everybody. Thanks for the opportunity to talk to you about some of the public safety issues that are going on in the neighborhood. I'll be very brief. I know City Manager Nichols has some things he'd like to say, and Chief or Chief Mitchell will do as well. What's going on in the Anglin neighborhood is complex. And the incidents, frankly, are random. From a public safety perspective, it would be much easier to address if they weren't random. But most of what we're seeing going on in that area is random, and our Chief Bird will probably talk a lot more about that. And then Chief Mitchell will talk a little bit about what we're doing on our campus as well. What I want you to know is the City of DeKalb and NIU have an incredibly strong relationship, both with the administration and with our police departments. And to be perfectly blunt, honest with you, that has not always been the case in the past. There have been times in the past where our police forces, frankly, have not worked in tandem. There's been times when we've actually had co-policing efforts, but there was a lot of trust between the two departments. And what I want you to know is that we have two fairly new chiefs, Chief Mitchell and Chief Bird. We have somebody who's been a former Husky. At least you're still, we always consider you still a Husky, but who's worked in this university, a fairly new mayor, and we are in constant contact We are at regular conversations about these issues. As I said, what's going on there is complex. It is a great challenge. But I just want you to know that we are very, very much in lockstep with the city. And so, Bill, I'll turn it over to you to make a couple comments before we have Chief Burton, Chief Mitchell, talk a little bit about what's happening and putting some of the things.
Thank you very much, Matt. Second, you're certainly going any further. Bill Nicholas, I'm a grandfather of six. Maybe they're my controller. As Matt said, an employee at this great institution, and my first retirement was in. And that time, he would not have been called to speak to this topic today. We had issues, but in terms of crime in our community, but and we had a pretty good working relationship. As Matt said, it hasn't always been. But I am very pleased to be here, by the way, have this opportunity, because what I'd rather be doing is talking about something that when I was hired in the early part of 2019, I said to the council in my interview that I thought we needed to do. And that was to have a fierce but civil conversation about race in our community. That conversation has certainly been engaged. It's been engaged since the beginning of time. But in recent years, we have been evolving a very constructive conversation about belonging in our town. And we are all linked together in that challenge and in that goal. But what doesn't belong, and I'm talking about what, not who, what doesn't belong here, is the kind of unlawful activity that we have seen spiking in the last couple of years, and most recently in a most egregious way with the loss of life and threats to neighborhoods near the campus, which affects the family that is NIU, as well as other neighborhoods more remote from campus. How many of you live in DeKalb? Some? Every one of you at some point takes advantage of our restaurants. Certainly if you're here for NIU events and evening or daytime activities, you are moving around our city. So we're interested in your safety as well as everybody's safety, and especially the students who come here with other purposes than to be worrying about whether it's safe to go from here to there. So here's where we are. And the gentleman flanking me in blue, black, will be able to more effectively talk to the details. But we are at a point where we have to define how we can provide safer housing in our community, because ultimately bad actors who are here to prey on our students, to prey on you, to prey on adults who have been here for as long as I have to have a place to lay their head at night. And we have had housing in our community that has been abided by certain landlords, not most, but certain landlords, and a rising number of units where we've had unlawful activity, frequent and chronic police calls. NIU has been supporting our municipal police force, and we are backing them up as well. And other agencies do the same to help all of us. But we have had a situation where a system we've had in place since 2013, it's called a crime-free initiative, has, I think, run its course. Every person who rents an apartment, student, non-student, young or old, is supposed to be signing a crime-free lease. That's a model lease that we have. It lays out the reciprocal responsibilities of the landlord and tenant. frankly, it still stands up. It grew out of a lot of conversation 10 years ago. And in recent conversations, landlords and tenants that I've talked to seem to think it still stands up. Landlords are not being accountable and doing what they're supposed to do in ways that we like to see them. So one last thing I'm going to say. What we're talking about here are not violations like, well, I've been here for 52 years, and when I came here in 1970, the worst thing that our police department dealt with were open containers on front lawns during a weekend, a school weekend. That's no longer the case. We're looking at Class A and Class B offenses. It's not important that I list them all, but these are felonious offenses that are affecting women in many cases, children, and violence is the one common denominator. Whether it's a domestic offense or something that involves the loss of life, of course, on the other extreme, and a lot of things in between, violence is the common denominator, and that cannot be acceptable here. That is what we cannot abide. And how we work together, all of us, people in this room and everywhere in our community, is what keeps me up and abides with me all day long.
Sure. Well, thank you again for having me. As Matt pointed out, I am the new chief of police here. I was appointed January of this year. Although I'm the new chief of police for NIUPD, I'm not new to DeKalb and I'm not new to this university. I've been here in this community now since 1988. I came here as an undergraduate student, and I'm a homeowner here. I met my wife here at the university and raised our kids here. I literally live 5 minutes off campus. And so I'm a Husky. I bleed the red and black, and I am honored to be the chief of police here. So this is my home. And I will tell you that the concerns that you have are the concerns that I have, are the concerns that the men on this at this table with me also have. And I will tell you the good news is, besides some of your concerns, is that the two police departments here, we work very close together in order to combat, attack, and prevent the issues that are happening in our community. But here's the reality. Our community is not in a bubble, and we are suffering some of the same issues that are proliferating across this country. So the violence that's happening here, and like Bill just said, he came here in 72, and you know, the petty offenses that the police were dealing with back then. I came here in 88. I'm from Chicago. So the violence that I saw in Chicago coming here as a student, when I came into this town, there hadn't been a murder in this town in over 50 years. And I thought this was utopia. And so, and after being here for all of these years and seeing our community continue to grow, thrive, and now the evolution of some of the crime issues, we're working very hard in order to communicate, share information. Our detectives work together. Our law enforcement officers on there, our boots on the ground work together. And per capita, this community, we have more officers per capita than a lot of communities across the country because the university is here and you have two police departments in close proximity with each other in order to serve the campus and surrounding community, as well as obviously the entire city. So that's the good part. Chief Byrd is an excellent partner. Him and I, we have scheduled meetings every week, and we talk a couple of times throughout the week, whether we're on the phone, texting each other. And as I said, our police departments are always sharing information. But we work very closely on co-policing initiatives. And so one of the things that we talk about is how do we deal with these issues? Well, proactive policing. FBI studies show to this day that one of the best ways to combat the type of issues that we're seeing is boots on the ground, foot patrol, uniform cops out in the community. And we're doing that, right? So you have vehicle patrols, you have people on foot patrol. The university has committed significant expenses into bringing additional private security, particularly to campus and the Antigonish North area, in order to be more of a uniform presence to support the police and what we're doing. And so you will see extra private security in cars, on foot patrol, on campus, and in the Antigonish North area. And we've gotten feedback from people about that uniform presence. We obviously patrol the campus and the surrounding community because public safety is the number one priority for the university, for the city, and the initiatives that we put in place in order to keep these areas safe. One of the things that we've talked about, David and I in particular, is that, like Matt mentioned, you know, a lot of this is just random. And also, not only proliferation of access to guns, but as well as the increase in the mental health crisis that is happening across this country. So some of the things that you may see and the safety bulletins that we put out, whether it's the city or the university, about shots fired or conflicts between people, most of those conflicts happen between people that know each other. And other conflicts are happening with people that have some mental health concerns. So that's the vast majority of it that's happening. And we just want to make sure that we're working in concert, we're communicating with you. I know I've heard personally that people say, wow, you guys put out so many messages, you know, about what's happening. Well, number one, we want to make sure you're informed. Number two, the university, it's federal law that we make sure that we communicate with our campus community about things that are happening. So that's very important. But information is power. And so if we're sharing the information with you, it's because we want to make sure you're informed. Also, it's our responsibility to do so. And we want you to be able to respond and take appropriate measures. Be informed and take appropriate measures because public safety is a shared responsibility. The most important thing that we get in the police department in order to help us do our job is information from community. And that information drives a lot of the things that we do in order to enhance our public safety initiatives. And I will say this last thing, and then I'm going to turn it over to my friend, Chief Byrd. Another thing that the university has invested a lot of money into is our NIU Safe App. Our NIU Safe App, I encourage everyone, our students, our faculty and staff, to download our NIU Safe App because that gets you access to a lot of information that the university can provide you, whether it's public safety information, weather alerts, our mobile blue light initiative that gets you connected directly to the police department, and other resource information that I think will be beneficial to your public safety. So so I'll turn it over to David right now and be ready to answer any questions that are come our way.
Just before you do, I just want to say how important that point is about mental health issues. And I think Joy was talking about that earlier too. And we don't by any means today want to suggest that there's a very clear separation between the issues that arise in the home where the conflicts may be resolved for the most part, and in some cases are not, in some cases lead to violence, and the kind of spike in the sharper violence that we're seeing. We have to work at the same time and cover both of those general sources of concern and unnerving concern in some cases. So,
oh, great. Thank you, sir. Well, good afternoon, everyone. And this is an honor to be here. And like Chief Mitchell said, we're not just partners in crime fighting. We're friends. We spend a lot of time together and we do talk about public safety on a regular basis. So unfortunately, I am a stranger to DeKalb. I am originally from South Side of Chicago, and I started my career with the Illinois State Police. Did 32 years with the Illinois State Police, and I worked strictly in the Chicagoland area. I retired as a colonel of patrol, so I was over all the patrol officers for the Illinois State Police throughout the state. So it was approximately 1,500 personnel under my span of control. And so we're used to dealing with serious crime. Before I retired from the state police, and the city manager, Nicholas, was gracious enough to bring me over as the chief of police of the city of DeKalb, we were dealing with 200 shootings on the interstate on a yearly basis for the last 2 or 3 years when I was over the Division of Patrol. So I'm very familiar with violent crime, unfortunately, growing up on the south side of Chicago and, you know, and then working for 32 years in the city of Chicago as a police officer. So very unfortunate that we have to deal with this. I personally have been had the unfortunate stance where I've dealt with violent crime. My younger cousin was killed on a street on the south side of Chicago, where we grew up at, the same place where we bought comic books as children. He lost his life in front of the same store. So I have I've been personally affected by violent crime. I've worked in the city of Chicago, and I've dealt with that. So unfortunately, it's a very complicated problem. I wish there was an easy answer, but that would be disingenuous of me to think that, because that's not the case. Very complicated. And one of the things that Chief Mitchell said, and I mentioned this Monday at our city council meeting, is that we are all stakeholders when it comes to public safety for the city of DeKalb. Everyone has a burden to meet when it comes to public safety, meaning that, we need you to be an extension of the police. And what I mean by that is, I don't want you to make an arrest. I don't want you to confront a violent offender. But if you see something, we need you to say something. If you get a license plate, you'd be surprised how just you jotting down the license plate or a color of a vehicle will lead to an arrest. So when I say that, I think, I just want to make sure we don't need you to be the police. We'll handle it. But we do need you to be our eyes when we are not there. And we can't be at every corner. I wish we could. I'm sure every law enforcement agency in the country would love to have an officer for every corner, for every street, but that's not possible. So we do need you to be a stakeholder as it pertains to public safety. Now, as far as the DeKalb Police Department, what we're doing to make sure that the city of DeKalb is a safer place, and to make sure that, of course, the university is safe as well. We've done a lot with technology. We've had license plate readers in certain areas in the city of DeKalb. And let me just tell you right now, they're extremely impactful. So for anyone who's probably unaware what license plate readers are, basically they're cameras, but they actually read constantly license plates. Now we have a filter in the system, and it picks up certain types. We call them hits, but a hit is something that we're looking for, meaning that we can put in a filter into the system that says we're looking for all stolen vehicles, anyone who was involved in a felonious act. We can do amber alerts, which are missing children. We can do silver alerts, which are missing elderly. So we get hits on any of those particular criteria that's in the filter. And so we've been able to really be impactful with the license plate readers. And the good thing is that the city manager and the city council of the city of DeKalb has given us opportunity to actually buy more license plate readers in the future. So what we would like is that that license plate reader system can serve as a net, a security net over the system. And it really gives us eyes when we don't have eyes. And it's, a lot of these type of violent offenders that we're interdicting, we might not have had contact with if it wasn't for the license plate readers. So they're very impactful. And we're going to continue, of course, to add to the program. Another resource that we've added is K-9 program. We've added two K-9 police dogs to the city of DeKalb. They are both narcotics dogs, and they have been very impactful as well. And we just purchased a gun dog. So this dog will be able to detect firearms, whether they are fired or whether they're not. So that's going to be very impactful as well. So the K-9 program at the DeKalb Police Department is really improving, and I'm very excited about the K-9 program. Also staffing, we're increasing our staffing through the help from the city manager and the city council of the city of DeKalb and the mayor. So our staffing numbers are growing. We're going to continue to add staffing to our force because visibility is extremely important. I've learned that through my career. You know, I said this is my 33rd year in law enforcement. I will tell you that visibility is probably one of the most impactful deterrents to crime. So believe me, if you know, if there's a criminal or a predator in the area, and in every block or every two blocks he sees a marked squad car, believe me, he'll think secondly about committing a crime in the city of DeKalb. So we understand that, and we're moving forward towards increased staffing. One of the other things I would like to at least speak about is that, you know, in regard to crime, one thing I will, and I'm going to pat the DeKalb Police Department on the back for this, because we have swiftly acted every time there's a major crime that occurs in the city of DeKalb. And what I mean by that is, I'll just give an example. We had a rape that occurred on September 6th, and we had that subject in custody almost 8 hours later. And that's just because of really strong police work, and officers have been doing that, like I said, on a daily basis. We try to win the day every day, and I tell them that every day, let's win the day. So that means if somebody commits a crime, I want them in custody as fast as possible, and our officers are doing that for the city of DeKalb, and it serves as a deterrent, and it's hard to quantify because we don't always get a chance to, I mean, we don't get to have conversations with criminals that come through our town. I wish we could, because they might tell you, we got out of DeKalb. You guys are, you know, are too quick, and you guys are making arrests too fast. So, and believe me, those conversations are happening on the back channels. We're just not privy to them because, believe me, but those criminals are talking. I do want to say that there are some trends, some very dangerous and deadly trends that are occurring in the city of Chicago and some other counties that are not affecting the DeKalb County. We do not have carjackings here in DeKalb County. So, which is, believe me, I am so happy, and I pray every day about that that does not occur here. It's probably one of the most violent offenses that a criminal can partake in, but you know, like I said, my family's from Chicago, so I know firsthand that carjackings are occurring on a nightly basis, multiple times, and it's just very dangerous. But we are not seeing carjackings in the city of DeKalb, and also we do not have an actual gang war in the city of DeKalb. Believe me, if there was a gang war in the city of DeKalb, there would be a lot of extensive carnage from the back and forth of a gang war. I know this firsthand, just from working in the city of Chicago, like I said, my whole career. And those are two things that we do not have happening in the city of DeKalb. So I just want to make sure that everyone understand that as well. And lastly, I do want to speak about mental health. And that is a major problem, not just in the city of DeKalb, but throughout the country. Every law enforcement agency is dealing with mental health. And I'll be honest with you and be completely transparent, that anyone who fires a weapon at someone else and is not in self-defense has temporarily had a mental issue or a mental breakdown. I know it's really the truth. We look at mental health, we think of someone who is clinically mentally ill, but sometimes these mental breakdowns may be temporary, but that is what's occurring. And so we do have social workers that work at the PD, and we use them extensively. We try to get them out to assist us on as many calls as possible. However, we have to make sure that these scenes are extremely safe before we bring in a social worker to ascertain and try to help us with the situation or make their assessment. So, like I said, at the end of the day, we are working extremely hard to keep the city safe. We work extremely hard with Northern Illinois University Police Department. Like Chief Mitchell said, we meet on a regular basis. We're friends. We text, we call, we talk. We make sure that we have as many officers in the area as possible. We actually reach out to Illinois State Police. They send officers to help us as well. DeKalb County Sheriff's is also a part of the public safety initiative that we have in place in the city of DeKalb. So there is a lot of law enforcement in the area, and it's really is going to take, it takes really, if you heard the saying, it takes a village. It does. It takes a village for us to keep the city of DeKalb safe. It really does. That's why when I tell everyone that they have a stake in this, they do. If you see something, you have to say something. You can get a license plate, get a license plate. If you can get a color of a car, get a color of a car. It's the beginning of our investigation. You just don't know how impactful those small bits of piece of information can lead to an actual arrest. But I do want to thank you all for having me. Thank you.
Can I just add, David, thank you very much. I think you did a great job of explaining the initiatives. But also I want to point out, because I want everyone in the room to understand, this campus is extremely safe. Compared to other campuses our size, this is a very safe campus. So the biggest crime that we deal with on this campus is theft. So very, very safe campus. Sometimes we might have a person, a homeless person that is, trying to frequent our building. And, but again, we get people that call and say, hey, this person, look like it may be homeless. They're here, and we're there quickly in order to address the situation and try and provide that person some type of resources to get them where they need to be. But I do want to stress that this is a very, very safe campus.
Thank you. I guess at this point, we will invite questions, and I would suggest that those who have questions, we have two speakers set up, one on the right-hand side, and there's another speaker here. So if you have a question, please move on to one of the speakers.
I apologize for taking a long time in getting here, but I have an Achilles tendon injury and I lose races to turtles walking across campus. It actually makes me more afraid of not being able to run away successfully from a predator. My name is Virginia Naples. I'm from Biological Sciences. I am particularly interested in all aspects of public safety because I teach forensic sciences. And I'm also a long-term member of the Cook County Medical Examiner's Disaster Response Team. But I would very much like to thank our officers for their service because they make our lives so much better, and I appreciate it. But I do have a question. And one of the questions that I have is, have you redistributed your license plate readers in response to dealing with contemporary issues such as the problems on Ridge Road?
So, those license plate readers are fixed. We can't just take them down and re-affix them somewhere else. But that is the good thing is that we are purchasing additional license plate readers. So we will do an assessment, ma'am. And if we find a need and we look at calls, let me just tell you that when we do an assessment, we do think about traffic volume, calls of service. We have to look at what we consider our hotspot or a heat map is what we call it. And it just tells us where most of our calls of service or most of our violent crime is occurring. And then we try to make sure that we have that covered first. So that's what we did with our first series of license plate readers. And we'll continue and we'll do that again when we make the next assessment. So we will look at that area though, ma'am, that's for sure. And we will do an assessment to make sure that we put the license plate readers where they can be the most impactful.
Thank you. And the other question is mostly because I don't know the difference, but I wonder if you would be kind enough to explain, at least to me, what is the difference between a license plate reader of the sort that you were using and traffic camera plate readers?
Sure. So it's really a software difference, and there's an equipment difference. We cannot, in order to, if you're looking for red light camera, that's a totally different mechanism, and we don't have that. And I know that I've heard that in the past, and I've tried to rebuke this as much as possible. The license plate readers is not for traffic violation. It is not. It's not. We don't have the equipment to do it. It will not do that for us. So we put in the filters that are most important, and the reason we have license plate readers is to interdict violent crime or to assist us in finding missing persons. So Amber Alerts, we do not, there's some departments that actually will filter, let's say, suspended driver's license, but that machine, I mean, they'll never have a quiet day in their life because suspended drivers are all over the place. So, but that's not our purpose. Our purpose is to interdict violent crime, to assist us in finding missing persons. And we have officers who are working the street every day to deal with traffic violations, red light violations. So there's no need for us to do that. And to be honest with you, to add that into our filter would water down the main reason why we have them up in the first place. And that is for violent crime interdiction and looking for missing persons. So you will never see that in the city of DeKalb, at least with the equipment we have now. So I just want to make sure everyone understands that. It's not for traffic violations.
Thank you very much. And if I may, you did touch upon this, but I would appreciate it if you could expand your explanation. What kind of cooperation are you getting from landlords to try to ensure safe behavior between landlords and tenants? Because we have very many people who are renting here, and especially in the areas where there have been lots of problems reported. And I'm very concerned not only of my own safety, but for everybody else in the local community. Thank you.
Good question, and I'll just address that very briefly. So there are about 1,300 landlords in town. We have some that own single-family houses that have been converted to rental spaces. But where most of our attention has been, unfortunately, are the larger complexes, apartment complexes, sometimes 150, 200, even 300 units to a complex that might have multiple buildings. And as you, I think, know, we've tried to be aggressive, and one of our most difficult landlords, under the court guidance, I'm not supposed to name them, but I think most of you know, we fought a couple years long legal battle to try to find a way to relieve them of some of their properties, and we were reasonably successful in doing that. So they went from 1,000 to 500 units. That helped, but the other 500 we're still addressing in one form or another. So what I didn't lay into, because we have a limited amount of time here, I'll just take one more minute. So the system we've had to try to make landlords more responsible has loosely been called a three-strike system. So the first time, in the interest of due process, when something happens at a unit and the police report it to the person who's involved in the bureau, we may find out that the landlord couldn't possibly have known what was going to happen. Might have been fishing in Canada with presumed help here back in good old DeKalb with a property manager, and a fight occurred. So normally there's just a conversation. Maybe we can stiffen the security plan you have for when you're away and so forth. And then we go to a second strike if it happened again in an indefinite period. It could have happened again 2 years later. And maybe at this point, there's some reason to believe the preponderance of the evidence was that the landlord could have known, should have known, could have done something differently. And the third strike is the possibility that unit, one apartment or the whole building, might be considered a disorderly house that can be appealed to an administrative hearing process and ultimately to the circuit court, which provides a state level of due process. We're narrowing that, and not narrowing it, we're compressing it to basically a strike. So the first strike, same due process, Any official action by the city might be stayed if there's a reasonable explanation. But if within 180 days, 6 months, the same thing, or one of the enumerated offenses occurs at the same unit, then it's a fine, not $50, it's $5,000. And the next offense and every subsequent offense is $10,000. So think about this, $800 roughly a month for many of these apartments. So let's round it up to $10,000 a year. You've just taken away a year's worth of income. It would certainly get somebody's attention. And that's our intention here. We don't by any means think it solves all crime in the city of DeKalb, but it should begin to roll back the most egregious behavior that's happening here in DeKalb. And I hate to be, this may sound cavalier, if the bad actors who are doing the worst work, and maybe they're just several hundred people, but there are enough of them and it's happening on a nightly basis and a daily basis. If they decide to go to some other place, because obviously they came from some place to find safe refuge here, I don't care. I'm caring about DeKalb. I won't say I don't care entirely, but mostly I care about what happens here. So that's what we're trying to do. The council heard the presentation on Friday night, or Friday night. We had Friday night problems. Monday night. In 2 weeks, we bring this up for an action event, and we'll see if the council supports it. If they do, we'll proceed to get it in place and get it rolling, and we'll report to you at your pleasure. Maybe in 6 months or so, we might come back and let you know.
I think it's important to say, Manager Nicholas, that many of the landlords actually support.
Absolutely. I meant to say at the beginning, the system we have was the result of many conversations in the last 30 to 45 days with landlords who, many of whom were here in 2013 working on the crime-free lease addendum and are still very much involved, really bulwarks of the community, working with NIU and us also on the Greek Row revitalization. There are a lot of good things, and Chief Mitchell said, here's some positive things. Here's another positive thing. Some areas, physical areas in town, geographic areas, are seeing a new look, and Blackhawk and Hillcrest is one of those. We still have more work to do over there, but and it's not enough just to physically improve the infrastructure, but we're trying to make it a more welcoming area, and we'll keep trying.
And thank you for your presentation. I'm Jeanette Rossetti from the School of Nursing. Chief Mitchell, I know you've heard a lot from us. And I really wanted the faculty senate members to know how responsive you and your team have been to us. We teach late in the evening. We're out on the outskirts of campus where a lot happening is. I'm always sitting looking at the text alerts when it's in the evening. And I'm thinking, oh, if that was a Thursday night, I'd be in the classroom right now. So you have brought police out. We have told them when we let class out. They've been in the parking lot. I teach every Thursday night till 6:40 p.m. They're there from 6:30 to 7 every Thursday night. We also have late classes on Monday evening. They're there every Monday evening. So when we leave, we at least see that presence, and it means a lot to, I know, myself and the students. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And I thank you so much for pointing that out, because I think that's a great example of what I was talking about earlier. The chair of the nursing department reached out to me and vocalized some concerns that she had. And me and my deputy chief went out and met with her. And literally after just understanding what her concerns were, we adjusted the things that we were already doing, because we were already doing foot patrols in the nursing building and making sure we had a visible presence. But she identified some things and pointed out some things that we weren't aware of. And so we adjusted our security procedures, and here's the end result. So I'm glad that you guys are pleased, because again, our ultimate job, my ultimate job. And I'm very supported by Dr. Streb and President Freeman in order to make sure that I get the support I need in order to do my job. And so I'm very responsive. Like I said, this is my home too. I am a Husky. I live in DeKalb, so I'm also a DeKalb resident. And so I'm an empty nester. So I have nothing else to do but devote myself to my job. So me and my wife, who also works for the law school. So thank you very much for sharing that story. Thank you.
Great.
Evgeny Nestor from chemistry and biochemistry. Thank you for your presentation again. And I think my question probably would be more to Chief Mitchell about the parking garage on this normal road next to Lateret Hall. In the late evening hours, this is usually a pretty spooky place. And I'm just wondering, are there like any video recording monitoring cameras over there in the garage? And if they are there, then probably it would be a good idea to have some sort of a clear, very visible signs that this place is under constant surveillance. That probably would make students less scared about actually going into that garage in the late hours.
Thank you very much, sir. I will say this, our parking deck, we work with facilities in order to make sure that the lighting is well lit, that all the bulbs are in place in the parking deck. Some of the technology that is over there, we've been evaluating. We do what's called security assessments of facilities, and the parking deck is one of those. And so we work with facilities in order to identify the things that are needed in order to make sure that the parking deck is a secure place as much as it can be. It's an open parking lot, so it's not like it's gated or anything like that. Our police department, we do constant patrols over there, particularly at night, because unfortunately, we've actually had a couple of people go to the top of the parking deck and try and commit suicide. The parking deck is definitely a place that we pay attention to. And facilities is aware of the things that we point out, particularly as it pertains to there are actual call boxes at the parking deck that you can, you know, press the button. However, that technology has been phased out. Our mobile blue lights, that technology is being phased out because it's old technology, and the technology that's new is the Safe app and the mobile blue light that you have literally in the palm of your hand. That's more helpful nowadays. So unfortunately, because it's an open parking lot or parking deck, like most parking decks, there's vulnerability, right? In any open, like this is a public university, right? There's gonna be vulnerabilities, but we do all we can in order to address it, but at the same time, letting people know the things that you need to do in order to keep yourself safe, be aware, that type of thing. And I will tell you this, the biggest problems that we have, I mentioned the incidents of people going to the top of the parking deck and harming themselves. That's only happened a couple of times since I've been here, and I've been here 22 years. And so, but the biggest problems that we have in the parking deck, quite honestly, are people that come and park illegally. That's the biggest problem that we deal with over there. So again, parking deck is a safe place, campus is a safe place, but we are working to just make sure the lighting is always illuminated as best as possible. I hope I answered your question. Yes, sir.
Everybody, of course, Matt Streb and Chief Mitchell, I've had the pleasure. City Manager Nicholas and Chief Britt, I don't think I have. I'm Dallas Douglas, current Speaker of the Senate for the Student Government Association. I wanted to thank all of you for your time today, but particularly to you, Chief Britt and City Manager Nicholas, for joining us. It's difficult to get students to come out to things like city council meetings and other municipal activities, so I really appreciate the active outreach. What I've heard from all four of you today is a really impressive investment in addressing crime issues, and a few mentions of proactive measures. And I'd like to hear more about some of those proactive measures, particularly from the city side of things. So City Manager Nicholas, you mentioned like infrastructure investments and mental health, like social services through the PD. I'm curious about other things like that, whether that's safe, affordable housing, food insecurity, stuff like that.
Great questions, and thank you for opening that up. And we'd be happy to go to the student organizational meetings as well. Just very quickly, because people, you have another part of your agenda here. In terms of proactive things, and that Chief touched on our licensed social workers that work with, we have two, we're aiming toward three, so that arguably every shift has somebody at hand who's actually on duty at the time that something is occurring, and we'll get there. Also, we have a community services department that we started during COVID, even though the money was down and before all the federal money came our way, to do things like that. And I'm happy to say we made a commitment then, and that commitment is continuing and increasing. Chief Mitchell said it correctly, and Chief Byrd touched on this as well. There used to be this concept of officer friendly. I mean, people get to know you. And until, I mean, it's the age old thing, unless you can't build trust without familiarity. And once you build the trust, you also move in the direction of some kind of a mutual respect. And at that point, a lot of things get better and a lot more people feel that they can approach and get involved, and they feel that they're working toward a larger whole. And that's our goal. Actually, that's happening every day, but there are just these things that keep popping up. Beep, beep, beep. If we had our email and text messages coming through, you'd be hearing it through the whole, and that's something over here, something over there. And it only takes you know, a couple hundred people in a town of 40,000 to kind of upset the apple cart at times. So we're going to keep pushing. Your help is essential. So last words on this. This past summer, we had no pop-up parties. We didn't have a murder. We didn't have, we had shots fired. And a lot of this is coming from young people who have access to guns who are firing them in the air. And some of you have heard them. How many of you have heard these in neighborhoods where you live? Okay. It's very unnerving. What does that mean? Does it mean that there's somebody at loose? As Matt said to start the conversation today, these are random. This isn't an organized, there isn't a wave of people coming in a direction of this neighborhood or that neighborhood. But so what can we do about that? We have the students that we serve, all of us serve and try to educate in many ways, formally and informally like we do, are a ripe market. I hate to say it, but that is absolutely the case. Thousands of young people coming here with other good intentions are easy prey for people who are here for their purposes, which are illegal, to prey on young women, to prey on young men, to prey on others who will give them the time of day. And they put heads in beds. That's why we're focusing on housing right now. That's not the only thing we're focusing on. And we have to work together all year round on that. And your help, better communication between us and the students we serve would be just the right thing.
And if I could just give you a quick snippet of, you know, the officers that we do have at the PD. We just graduated two young officers, and my initial challenge, just so you have an idea of who's working the streets and who you'll have encounters with, my initial challenge was to, when you do go to the academy, not to be pedestrian and to be leaders, be impactful. So both of them, you know, actually took that to heart. And one of our young officers, a female named Savannah Long, she went down there. She was the class president of a class, and she won the fitness award. Her other partner who went down was the secretary of the class, and he was tied for top shot in the class. So those are the type of officers that we have at the city of DeKalb. We challenge them to be as, you know, to be the best they can be. I mean, I know that's a cliche, but we, you know, that's kind of, you know, I give them a letter every time I get a new officer, and it's a challenge, and it's for their eyes only. And that's the type of officers we want in a city to count, because they're leaders. They already have leadership ability. And they're doing an amazing job here at the city of DeKalb, along with the Northern Illinois University police officers. Like I said, I know a lot of them. Some of them are my friends, good friends of mine. And they work together in tandem. When we put our bike teams out in the summer, you'll see a DeKalb Police Department officer and a Northern Illinois University officer together on the bike. So, you know, like I said, we're moving in the right direction. I understand that this is a shift in what the city of DeKalb, I'm sure if you go back 10 or 12 years ago, they probably like, wow, whoever thought we'd be dealing with this type of crime nexus. But I mean, it is a wave that's going across the country, and it's not. And as you can, if you see what happened in Highland Park, it doesn't matter how much money you have. It really doesn't. There are predators in every city throughout the country, and some of them hide pretty well. And then some of them are right in your face all the time. So you just have to be mindful of that. And I think at the end of the day, and I always say this, I say a dark alley in DeKalb is dark. It's just like a dark alley in Chicago. It's just like a dark alley in Naperville. You have to keep your head on a swivel, be smart. Like you were saying about the garage, I told my daughter when she was in college, I said, FaceTime me every time you leave. If you got a light, if you have a late class, FaceTime me. Because a predator, if he thinks, you know, if you're on the phone or you're talking to someone, they will bypass on you. But if you have your head down with your headphones on and you're not paying attention, that's the one they will target, because you're not paying attention. So I just wanted to put that out there, because I just wanted you to know the type of officers that you have working for you, not just in the city of DeKalb, but at the university. Thank you.
And also, let me just say this as well, because I hear this still. I've been known as 22 years, and I still hear this from people. We'll find out about something, and they say, "Oh yeah, well, you know, I didn't want to call you guys, 'cause I don't want to bother you." No, it's our jobs. So you call us anytime. We're open 24/7. You're never a bother. We get paid. We're the paid public safety professionals to take care of our communities, to work with our constituents. So there's never a time you should ever feel like, oh, I don't want to call the police because I don't want to bother them. No, it's our job to serve you. So just point that out.
Totally agree.
Okay. Is there any other question? We'll take last one and move very quick if there is any. If not, in the interest of time, I would like to ask the Faculty Senate to join me in thanking everyone of our speakers for taking time to come here today, address this issue, which is of, you know, evolving, but at the same time also of prime importance to campus community and the DeKalb community as well. So please join me in thanking.
Thank you.
Thank you all for having us. Thank you very much.
So with this, we'll move to agenda item 9. Which is consent agenda. But do we have any item?
We do not.
Right. Item 10, unfinished business. Looks like we do not have unfinished business as well. Do we have new business, which is agenda item 11? So next, we have agenda item 12. Reports from councils, board, and standing committees. So agenda item 10A, we have the Faculty Advisory Council to IDHE. I wonder if Linda is here. Right.
Is it on now, Tony?
Oh, thank you. Okay. So I don't mean to disappoint anyone, but I don't actually have a report for you today. And let me explain why, if you'll indulge me for a moment. I showed up at Peoria, which is where the September 16th meeting was being held. And the chair of the FAC contacted me to tell me he wasn't going to make it to the meeting. So I had to chair the meeting, and it was rather last minute notice. And so I was very busy making sure that we had everything that we needed at that meeting. And was not able to take extensive notes. So I've decided to postpone my report so that I can give you a more comprehensive report on exactly, and maybe look at the minutes from our new secretary to fill in all the gaps that I wasn't able to take notes on. And so our next meeting is October 21st at Benedictine. And so that is before the next Faculty Senate meeting, and I will be able to have a more comprehensive report for you at that time. But I would like to say, Pat, before I go, that the name tents were a huge success. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Linda. Agenda item 10B, University Advisory Committee to the Board of Trustees. Yeah, so I will take a stop on this, and if the other members are around, they can hopefully chime in. So the Board of Trustees met on September 15. The board received a mini report mainly from President Freeman, including collective bargaining agreement for the NIU Instructors Unit, Local 4100 of the University Professionals of Illinois. I'm sure most of us know that this unit represent 236 employees, approximately 224 of which are in the Division of Academic Affairs and 12 in the Division of Outreach, Engagement, and Regional Development. The scope of the negotiation is full and calls for a four-year agreement retroactively effective from July 1st, 2021 through June 30th, 2025. Pursuant to terms and condition of this agreement and university policies and guidelines, President Freeman recommended that the Board of Trustees approve the agreement. The board did unanimously, and President Freeman acknowledged and thanked the role of the NIU Instructors Unit 4100, the University Professional of Illinois, for their essential role in the success of the university. The board also received report on surplus real estate property determination for nursing school building located at 1240 Normal Road in DeKalb. This property consists of a single story 24,000 foot square structure on 9.5 acres. The university purchased this property back in 1987 for use as the nursing school program. This building has served the university well over 35 years as the university property, but the eventual relocation of the School of Nursing program to the new Health IT Center caused this building to become a surplus to academic requirement. As a result of DeKalb Community School District 428 interest seeking to accommodate its growing student population, there is a potential that this building will continue to serve the community, that is, if something come through that. President Freeman presented the university recommendation to the Board of Trustees to determine the property as surplus to university need. The board approved the university recommendation unanimously again. The last kind of relevant and important highlight I want to kind of get across is that President Freeman also presented university recommendation requesting the Board of Trustees to establish a award to recognize current staff who are instrumental in the university successes. I'm happy to call on either Holly or Felicia, if they are here, to add anything they would like to add. Otherwise, full information on any of these can be found on the Board of Trustees website. And if you look at the information section of your agenda, you will find a link where you can find the minute. With that, I will now like to call on agenda item 10C. That would be report from Faculty Senate Social Justice Committee and my wonderful colleague, David Valentiner, standing there will be delivering that report.
Okay, thank you, Ishmael. I hope this is on. I missed the first Faculty Senate meeting. I was away. So I thought that I would just kind of give a little bit of a brief recap for those of you, just to recount the brief history of the Faculty Senate Justice Committee. It was about a year and a half ago that the then ad hoc Faculty Senate Justice Committee, headed by Ishmael, issued a report that included some recommendations, including a recommendation to create the standing committee, the Faculty Senate Social Justice Committee. And that report also included a number of recommendations. And so when the standing committee was formed, they took five of those recommendations, recognized them as priority recommendations, created three work groups, and through last year, they worked on these priority recommendations. I should also note that there was quite a bit of work being done by DEI, ADEI, which is the group here on campus, headed by Bernice Edgehill Walden, and that group is charged with addressing DEI issues here on campus. And they were doing a lot of work that fit with many of the recommendations that we were working on. And the provost, recognizing that we had very ambitious goals and that we needed support to do the work, provided some support. And so there were some people who worked on moving some of those recommendations forward throughout the summer. Since the semester started, we've had one Faculty Senate Justice Committee meeting. The work groups have all had at least one meeting and they continue working on it. It seems like a natural next step for us is to coordinate with ADEI. As I understand it, Bernice has something of a plan, a community of practice that they're in the process of rolling out. We don't have information on that. We need to get information on that to coordinate. And we have a meeting set up to try to facilitate some of that coordination. I think that meeting takes place tomorrow. The main things that I see going forward is that I'm hoping to have somewhat of a systematic evaluation of the recommendations that we're going, that we're working on, that we've identified. I think that we've been making progress on them, although we haven't systematically evaluated whether we're working on all of them. I don't have any other initiatives planned, but it's early days and we still need to coordinate with ADEI. If any of you have any interests or concerns, I hope them that you'll bring them to me because I'd very much like to have the work we do informed by the concerns and interests that the faculty have. That's it for my report.
Thank you, David. So item 12F, Rules and Election Committee. Have any report? No. 12F, Student Government Association.
Thanks, Dr. Montana. Again, just hello to everybody. I'm Dallas. I'm the current Speaker of the Senate for the Student Government Association. So I thank you to everybody who presented today, though they've all gone now. Joy Mitchell for the new Student Code of Conduct and our panel of experts on campus and community safety. I'm intending to pass along all the information that I gathered to the Senate at our meeting this Friday at 2 p.m. Just some updates from our side of things. The Senate is working on orienting itself to engage in research and collaboration on addressing a number of issues facing students right now that we're hearing, like infrastructure, hiring and pay, and dining. So if you get an email from a senator or somebody you know gets an email from a senator, rest assured we're intending to work in tandem with existing university initiatives to address these problems. I also want to specifically address anybody here from the College of Education or from university housing. We have one Senate seat available in the College of Education and three in housing. Getting all those seats filled is essential to the function of the Senate and to a productive SGA. So if you can think of any students who'd be a good fit for public service, please shoot me an email, ddouglas1@niu.edu. That's it for me. Thanks.
Great, thank you. We move to agenda item 12G, Operating Staff Council. No report. Item 12H, Supportive Professional Staff Council. No report. I guess so. Our next agenda item then is agenda item 13, informational items. This is kind of self-explanatory. They are what they are: listing, policy library, academic planning, council, etc. And there are minutes and agenda for all of these university committees. If you're interested on any of that, please just visit it for any information that you would like to access. With that, I believe we pretty much cover everything that we have on our agenda today, unless if there is any important thing that I missed. And if not, then I would like to entertain a motion in a second to adjourn today's meeting if you guys would like. Good. Second. All in favor, say aye. Oppose. Abstention. The meeting is adjourned, and thank you everyone for your time. Great. Right.